Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Kimberly Aldrich and I represent the North Olmsted Board of Education in this matter. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal time. The issue that is presented by this appeal is whether the appellee, Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company, had standing to file a decrease complaint with the Cuyahoga County Board of Revision on March the 27th, 1995. Briefly, the facts of this case are that in November the 30th of 1994, Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company entered into a purchase agreement with Victoria Plaza Limited Partnership for the purchase of an apartment building in North Olmsted. The deed was signed on March the 28th, 1995, and was filed on March the 31st, 1995. Prior to the deed being signed and filed with the court, Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company filed a decrease complaint with the Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. At the time, the Board of Revision dismissed that complaint on the grounds that it was a second filing in a triennium, and Victoria Plaza then appealed to the BTA. At the BTA, the Board of Education argued that although the reasoning was incorrect for the dismissal, that the dismissal was appropriate given that Victoria Plaza did not own the property on March 27th, the date that they filed their complaint. The BTA disagreed and they found that the limited liability company did own the property. They had an equitable ownership and that was sufficient for standing under 5715-19 and 5715-13. The Board of Education's position is that Victoria Plaza, and I'm just going to refer to them as Victoria Plaza throughout, and when I say that I'm referring to the limited liability company, the appellees. It's the Board of Education's position that they did not own any taxable real property within Cuyahoga County on March the 27th. And the partnership complaint, that was filed and it was dismissed as being filed by a non-attorney. It was filed by Avtax, Inc. That, I believe it was the BTA. Yeah, it was the BTA that dismissed that as being filed by a non-attorney under the Sharon Village decision. It's our position that, as I said, they did not own property on March 27th, the day that they filed their complaint. If you look at the statute, the way it reads, it just says you must own property. It's our contention that that word means the commonly used accepted meaning of a legal title holder, and that would be the only individual who owned the property on the filing date. The legislature has, in other code sections, addressed the issue of ownership, and they have expanded it beyond that common definition that I just cited to include other interests such as a land contract, someone under a land contract, other equitable interests in the property. If you look at that, you see that the legislature did take into consideration there are other interests in property, and they decided to expand it, the definition of owner, when they wanted to expand the definition of owner. When they didn't want to expand the definition, they just used the word own. And that's what they used in 5715-19. And following that construction, I believe that the decision must be that owner means the legal title holder on the date that the complaint is filed. Further, in my brief, I addressed two cases that were decided by this court previously where the court did take up the issue of ownership. Those cases were Bloom versus Wides and State X Rail Multiplex versus South Euclid. Now, in both of those cases, they were building permit cases. The building permit code said that the application could be filed by an owner of property or his duly authorized agents, very similar to the language used in 5715-19. In both of those cases, a building permit application was filed by an individual who did not own the property. In one case, it was a lessee, that was the Bloom case, and in the multiplex case, it was somebody, just as in this case, who had entered into a purchase agreement, but the sale had not been consummated and the deed had not been signed. In those cases, the court addressed the issue of what it meant to own property under the code, what that code section was looking for. And in both cases, they felt that because it just used the word owning, that it meant the common term of legal title holder. And we believe that that case is precedential to this one and supports our position that it must be the legal title holder on the date of the filing. And there's no evidence in the record that Victoria Plaza owned any other property in Cuyahoga County, any property at all, actually, in Cuyahoga County on March the 27th. Therefore, they did not have standing under 5715.19 to bring the claim in the first place. The second prong of our argument is under 5715.13, that Victoria Plaza was not a party affected, such as to file a decrease complaint with the Board of Revision. This court has stated that a party affected means somebody who the decrease will produce a material effect upon. A review of the record will show that pursuant to the terms of the purchase agreement, Victoria Plaza Limited Partnership was going to pay for all of the taxes for the tax year 1994 at the time of closing. And in fact, a review of the closing statement shows that the taxes were paid, so there was no lien on the property at the time that the deed was transferred to Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company. Therefore, they were not affected by any decrease for the tax year 1994 because of... Right, that they were not a party affected under 5713 because... Right, the tax was paid at the closing. No, it was paid, I believe the closing statement showed that taxes up through the date of transfer, March 28th of 95, had been paid at the time. So all of 1994 and a good portion of 95 was paid for at the date of closing. So it did not affect the property because at that point it was paid. It was no longer a lien upon the property, is our position. And since the taxes were paid, that... Yes, the deed was... Mm-hmm. Right. And they were paid. I don't want to misspeak, but I believe that they were going to be paid. But again, I don't... That they would be paid at the time of closing to the treasurer. And again, that's... I'm not 100% sure on that, so I can't, represent that as the truth. That's my understanding of it, though, is that they were paid at the time of closing. Therefore, the lien was no longer there for the tax year 94. Well, I think that would fall under what the contract provided for. If I represented the seller in that case, I would argue that the seller would be entitled to any reduction they received because they were the ones that paid the taxes. It was out of their pocket. The seller. If they're successful, there would be a refund. I don't know if the purchaser would be entitled to the... Well, I don't think the money would go to the purchaser. I think the money would go to the seller who paid the taxes. I don't think... Right, they're the ones who paid it. I think they would be entitled to the refund. I don't believe that the purchaser would have any claim to the refund that would... It would just be inequitable. They did not pay the taxes. Why should they benefit from any refund? Right, exactly. That's why I said I don't know if that was covered in the purchase agreement. I wasn't looking for that in the purchase agreement, and I don't, so I can't answer that. But I would argue that the purchase or the seller would be entitled to any refund if there was one, if they were successful. Wrapping up that first prong of our argument, again, it's the Board of Education's position that, first of all, Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company did not own any property on March the 27th. The term own, if you look at the legislature and if you look at the history that the legislature, when they wanted to expand the term own to include people outside of legal title holders, they did so. When they didn't, they just left the word own alone. That indicates the legislature's intention that 57-15-19 apply only to the title holders, not any equitable interests out there. Coupled with this court's previous decisions that when the term owner is used in a code section, that means the title holder and no one else. In multiplex, in fact, the court specifically rejected the argument that a purchaser under a contract was an owner of the property. And based on those decisions, it's the Board of Education's opinion that Victoria Plaza was not an owner on March the 27th of any property in Cuyahoga County and therefore did not have standing in the first place to file any complaint. Secondly, if this court decides that they were an owner, that they were not a party affected given the fact that the taxes were paid as a date of closing, and excuse me, and there would not be a lien on the property for the 1994 tax year. Now, the Board of Revision, excuse me, the Board of Tax Appeals, and its decision based its decision on the theory of equitable conversion. Its opinion was that the Victoria Plaza was an equitable owner on March the 27th, and by virtue of this equitable ownership, they had standing to file a complaint. We would submit that the equitable conversion, that is, it's a legal fiction that applies only to the parties to the contract. It basically sets forth the rights between the purchaser and the seller to the purchase agreement, and it does not affect any claims outside of the purchase agreement itself, and it does not apply to parties outside of the contract, such that Victoria Plaza could not use that as a defense. They could not say, well, I'm an owner because I have an equitable interest in the property. It would be the same as if there was a judgment creditor to Victoria Plaza going and trying to file a lien on the property before the deed had been filed. They're not an owner, they don't own the property, and no one can attach the property based on a judgment against Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company because the equitable conversion theory only applies between the parties to the contract and not to these outside entities such as the Board of Revision or the Board of Tax Appeals. Which cases, anyone in particular? Right, you're referring to probably the, and I cannot pronounce it, I call it Grodna versus Kinney and Gastineau versus Kinney, which are Court of Appeals cases. One is an unreported and the other from Cuyahoga County. Gastineau found that the equity vested interest in ownership in the YMCA, and under that they were permitted to apply for a tax exemption. That case involved a land installment contract, and I think the case is wrongfully decided, in my personal opinion, because the statute there said title. To me, title is title, record title. I think they were wrongfully decided. But if the court agrees with these decisions, they're distinguishable from this case because it was a land installment contract, which does provide the seller or the buyer with a much greater interest in the property than just a purchase agreement. This is a land installment contract that had been in place for approximately a year, I believe, at the time the exemption application was filed, and I think the interest was a greater interest than when you're looking at just a purchase contract. In that case, the court also recognized that the title holders could have filed the application, and the title holders were joined in the appeal, and I think that that may have had a bearing on the court's decision. In this case, the title holders did not join in the complaint. In fact, they filed their own complaint with the Board of Revision, and I think that is a distinguishing factor from the Gastineau case. In the Grodna case, the court actually relied on the Gastineau case for its decision. And again, as I've stated, I personally think that they were wrongfully decided. I think you need to look at title means title, not you don't need to get into these equity interests. I think if you do, you're going to be opening the door to many variety of people who can file. For example, beneficiaries under a trust would now be able to file. I believe lessees have an equity interest. They would be able to file. And I don't think that the legislature intended for the standing statute to have as great an application. I believe they intended to narrow it to just the owners of the real property. So, thanks.
May it please the court. I believe that those two cases do involve a building permit, but in this particular case, the term is not owner. It's any person owning real property may file a complaint. There are other cases that I... Right. And in these building permit ordinances that were involved in Bloom and Multiplex, they were involved the term owner. And in those cases, they basically said the owner had to be the legal title owner. In our case, one point that the Board of Education fails to make clear or even note is that the complaint was actually filed by both the owner and the seller, of both the buyer and the seller. On the face of the complaint, it says Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company, care of Assany GMS Realty Company, buyer / Victoria Plaza Limited Partnership seller. At the time the complaint was filed on March 21st, 1995, both the buyer and seller agreed to file a complaint for the potential refund. Thereafter, when the seller realized, pursuant to the contract that it signs, which are adjustments, which appears on page 21 of the supplement to the record, the following are to be apportioned at some midnight of the day immediately prior to the closing date, which shall increase or decrease the purchase price, which is ever applicable. It states that taxes and assessments, both general and special, shall be prorated or adjusted on the basis of the latest available tax duplicate. The reading of that is that any potential refund caused by the sale of the subject property would accrue solely to the benefit of the buyer, because the taxes, according to the contract and according to the closing statements, were prorated between the parties, not paid to the treasurer, but between the parties on the closing date, which was March 31st, 1995. It is apparent that the closing date was pushed up because the deed was actually signed on March 28, 1995. And the reason why I assume that there was this disagreement over the taxes at the time of the initial closing, which was scheduled for March 28th. So that's one fact that is failed to be admitted. However, on the face of the complaint, which is page, right, on the face of the complaint, you can see that line underneath Victoria Plaza Limited Partnership Seller, meaning that's all supposed to go up on the first line. And then at the time, there was authority for Mr. Siegel to do it. Thereafter, on behalf of the partnership. Thereafter, there was apparently a falling out between the buyer and seller. The seller filed its own complaint 2 days, 3 days later, on March 30th, using a tax agent. So indeed, the complaint filed by the parties before this court today was the first in time filed with the Board of Revision, which is one of the reasons the Board of Revision's dismissal of that complaint as being the second complaint in the triennium was erroneous, because 1994 was the first year of the triennium in Cuyahoga County, and this was the first complaint filed in that county on this property during that triennial. And to clarify your earlier questions, the second complaint, which the Board of Revision decreased to the purchase price that was filed on behalf of the partnership, was subsequently dismissed by the BTA, and then they reinstated the value of the county auditor, and then subsequent thereto, they reversed and remanded this case that was erroneously dismissed based upon, yes, based upon equitable conversion. So, but I would like this court to clarify whether or not the equitable conversion, which under the circumstances of this case, where the buyer under the contract would be the only one entitled to any refund, has standing to file a complaint. In other words, whether or not a buyer under an executory contract is the owner of real property and is entitled to file a complaint, because Ohio real property law recognizes equitable conversion. And indeed, the Board of Education is not saying that equitable conversion did not take place. It argues that it's not sufficient title. But under equity, and the cases that I cite in my brief, the interest in real property passes to the buyer. Equity considers the buyer the owner of the real property, and the seller has a personal property interest in getting paid under the terms of the contract. And the cases, in most of the cases involving equitable conversion, do not involve the rights between the parties, the buyer and the seller. They involve the rights between outside parties who are interested in attaching the real estate or other interests of the parties. And I think I've dealt with the issue of whether they're affected by this. But just to summarize, real property in this state incurs a continuing liability for taxes based upon its valuation. Thus, the buyer, under an executory contract, which owns all beneficial interests, including beneficial title, equitable title, has an obvious and real interest in the tax value. The tax lien runs with the property itself. The seller has no personal liability for the taxes if he doesn't pay them after he sells the property. Here, the taxes were prorated based upon the current tax duplicate at the value set by the auditor. Both parties realized that that value was higher than their purchase agreement, and at the time the complaint was filed, both sought the refund. When somebody informed the seller that perhaps they were not going to get any of the refund, they filed their own complaint afterwards. Right. The second half were still due and outstanding. According to the closing statements, and there are, the statement, there are two sheets. One is the statement of the buyer and one is the statement of the seller. The taxes, were, let's see if I can, the taxes as far as the limited liability company, they were taken out of their proceeds because during 1994, for the whole year, the seller was obligated under the terms of the contract to pay the taxes. In fact, according to the settlement statement, taxes through the closing date, which was March 31st, 1995, even the first 3 months of 1995, were paid by the seller's funds because that was under the contract. The closing, they gave debits and credits to the parties for the various tax liabilities pursuant to the contract. And that's in the record. It's page 26 is the closing statement, and page 27 of the supplement to the brief of the appellate. On page 21 of that same supplement is the provision for how taxes are to be prorated between the parties. And there it states, shall be prorated or adjusted on the basis of the latest available tax duplicate, which would be the value set by the county auditor for 1994. No, they did not. In fact, the company was created to actually purchase this particular apartment complex. And that's why it's called Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company, because the building is called Victoria Plaza. The one thing I want to point out and I take somewhat offense to is that in the reply brief, they argue that we had no authority to file the complaint on behalf of the seller at the time the complaint was filed. We had authority based from both the buyer and the seller. It's not documented in the record. It was never a point that was contested before. The face of the complaint speaks for itself. The authority of an attorney to file a complaint pursuant to general law is 4705.01, that grants an attorney to file and commence a proceeding without any further qualification. Here, there certainly wasn't an issue of whether or not we were authorized to file the complaint, because indeed, on the date it was filed, we were. I have nothing further.
Well, again, it's our position. There's absolutely no evidence that the seller did give authority to file the complaint. It's our position that we've never seen this authority, and in fact, they had someone else file a complaint just a few days later with a duly executed authorization form, which. I wasn't involved in the lower proceedings. A review of the briefs. I know that we did challenge the ownership issue, and I didn't read the BTA briefs before this to refresh my memory. I just can't answer if that specific issue was raised at the BTA. I wasn't involved at that point. I became involved when we filed to the Supreme Court, but it is our position that there's absolutely no evidence that he did have authority to file. We do not doubt he had authority to file on behalf of the buyer. No, but the buyer didn't also file a subsequent authorization giving someone else authority to file the complaint. I think the fact that a subsequent complaint was filed just 3 days later with a duly authorized or executed authorization form naming Avtax Inc. as the official agent for the seller weighs heavy. I think that indicates that they chose Avtax as their agent and not Mr. Siegel. I'm sorry. Oh. And in sum, we would request that this court find that, in fact, Victoria Plaza Limited Liability Company did not own any real estate in Cuyahoga County on March 27, 1995, based on the intention of the legislature and just using the word owning in the statute and in this court's prior decisions in which it held that owning or owner means the legal title holder, and we would request that this court reverse the decision of the BTA.